handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 12:33 p.m. East Coast time, December 26th, in the year of our Lord, 2021. If you can hear clickety-clacks, those are the sounds of Cookie Bear Covan leaving the room because she has gained a particular set of skills to know when I'm discussing comedy, when I am doing anything comedy. I think she hears... Her hearing is so sensitive that she just picks up the subtleties of despair and harbingers of rage. So as soon as, I mean, if it's the morning and I'm talking about something not going viral or not getting returned to an email, she'll be sitting in her chair post-breakfast and you'll just hear clickety-clack and she will leave the room. You know, like ants building up little hills during storms or something, or when storms are on their way, that's Cookie. She knows when comedy is being discussed, and she gets the F out of living room dodge. Not afraid of blah. Yes, here it is, the day after Christmas, and the misery never stops, the work never stops. I decided to do this Sunday, because, like I said, with these short weeks especially, day job, very demanding. So, figured I'd get the episode up today. The headline, folks, for anybody, and I know, you know, for both my podcasts, listening is down. That may be because of holidays or whatever, but yeah. So it is what it is. For those that do listen, that do care, terrific news on the mom front. She had her surgery this week for breast cancer, and it was her second bout with cancer. I was joking with her. She's like RoboCop at this point. She's had two knee replacements. She had gallbladder removed many years ago. She had, I want to say, uterine cancer when I was in law school, and breast cancer now, and went with her to the hospital. I watched Elf in the waiting room. I had about 4 hours to kill, so I read a little and watched Elf, you know, a cheerful movie, which, quick sidebar, Elf has some funny parts, but it's not that good a movie, so let's just stop with the modern-day classic. There are some funny images and scenes, but it is not a good movie, and about 65 minutes into the movie, I think the writers realize that, and all of a sudden, we speed towards a conclusion. For my money, diehard debate aside, I was very impressed with It's a Wonderful Life last year, which I watched for the first time last year. And this year's Christmas offerings, I watched the aforementioned Elf, and I watched A Christmas Story for the first time. That's the movie that's on like 24 hours a day on TNT or TBS every year. And I never watched it because I was like, well, whatever. It'll be on next year. for 24 or 12 showings. But I finally watched it on HBO Max, and I got to say, I was pleasantly surprised. Obviously a little dated, but didn't really realize that it was just a straight-up kind of comedy. So it was solid. Obviously, there's always going to be a dated factor to these Christmas movies from different decades, but I was actually pleasantly surprised with A Christmas Story. Next year's movie will be... next year's movie will be Miracle on 34th Street. So look forward to that, everybody. Just 52 weeks left. So plan, put it in your calendar, Righteous Prick Podcast, 72nd review of Miracle on 34th Street 2022. Anyway, back to the more important news. So obviously it was very stressful because a few weeks ago, the news for my, as I alluded to last week, the news for my mom was not good. They just sort of anticipated very bad news. I went to one set of appointments with my mom. My brother went to the other, which was actually with the doctor. And they both called me independently and were like, yeah, the prognosis is not too good, but we can hope for the best. Well, as it turns out, the scans revealed that there had been no spread. And when they did the surgery and the removal, it had not spread to the lymph nodes at all. So it was literally, as far as I know and have learned, the best possible outcome. I was just very thankful this week. I'm not prone to too much sentimentality, I guess, but that was something to be deeply thankful for in a real substantive way, not in a I'm glad I got gifts and stuff. Like I said last week, my mom has now basically survived everything that has killed every member of her family. I believe my grandfather, who I never met, I think he died of heart disease, heart attack. But my mom's mom passed away from an infection during a gallbladder surgery in the 50s. So that was traumatizing for my mom to have her gallbladder removed, albeit with significant improvements in science and safety. And then her sister, her older sister, when she was 21, her older sister passed away from cancer. And then last year, her younger brother died of cancer. So she's now survived two bouts with cancer and gallbladder surgery. So that's, I don't know if she has survivor's remorse or survivor's guilt, whatever it's called, but I hope not too much, because we're obviously very happy that she is an extremely lucky and an extremely tough person. And that's I think that's a good combo to have. I think I'm an unlucky pussy, and I think that would explain why my career, or plural careers, have worked out the way they are. But part of that is because I had a pit bull of a mother. So, that was, I think my mom thinks of me as like the Michael Corleone of the family, but it's really my brother who I think, if we were a mob family, I think my brother would be Michael and I would be Sonny. There's no Fredos in our family, okay? In case you were thinking that. No Connies and no Fredos, but I think I'm the Santino, even though I'm the younger brother. And my brother would be the cold calculating. Maybe my brother would be a Don Corleone, to be honest. Just the benevolent, vicious and tough when needed, but other than that, beloved Don. But I think my brother could have a little bit of Michael Corleone in him. And fortunately, I'm not Fredo, so I don't have to worry about him ever shooting me on a boat. Spoiler, Godfather 2. Incredible. Incredible luck and incredible tenacity. So very happy about that. That's the update. And thank you for everybody who messaged me and wrote to me. That's really all there is, I think, to be. I mean, there's more to be thankful for, don't get me wrong, but that sort of overshadows everything. Didn't get to see my mom on Christmas because she doesn't like me. No, I'm kidding. Because, we're sort of playing it safe with Omicron. I was feeling very run down a few days ago, took an at-home test. I was like, God damn it, if DC gave me COVID or AIDS, I'm going to be pissed. And so far, negative on COVID, but I am going to get like a real PCR or whatever the fuck they call them, the real test where they skull fuck you with a Q-tip and then tell you if you have COVID. So hopefully I don't. I don't think I do. I tested negative on the at home, and I'm already feeling better. I was just run down because I had like 5 nights of terrible sleep in a row. So I think that's it on the medicinal front, the health front. But that's obviously overshadows everything. And it took me a full, I'm so proud of this. It took me a full 3 days, sorry, 2.5 days before I made both my mother and the righteous girlfriend cry because of my depression tirades on Christmas Eve, which was not great. Not afraid of making it about me after my mom survives cancer. I don't know, but I think the holidays just, I said to the righteous girlfriend, I said at one point, I was like, next year I'm going away for 3 days. I'm working in a soup kitchen for 3 days. That's the kind of dick I am. I threaten to do charitable work. I'm like, you know what? If I'm this miserable next year, I'm going to help others. Okay. That's how much I hate my life. I'm going to do something good for other people out of spite to myself. But I don't know what it is. I think it's because I've been so stressed about comedy and the day job that my idea of a holiday weekend, especially one religiously based, at least for me, would be go to church, go to a soup kitchen, and not see anybody. And I know that sounds very antisocial, but it's like it becomes a thing where I need some kind of time alone to just relax and be like, but I couldn't, I was like getting, it's a fucked up thing. Like on December 24th, the morning of, I kept thinking, my mind was racing. Like I have 3 days off. I can read a lot. I can like bang out a couple of Netflix movies. I can, and all of a sudden things that are supposed to be relaxing started racing through my mind. Like they were chores. Like I had a limited amount of time before my day job in comedy, fucking ruined my mood and my life for another week starting Monday. So I was like in this panic. It's a very weird feeling. I don't know if anybody else feels this, and I think it's partly on me. It's something internal, but it's also external. That all, you know, on a little level, these streaming platforms start to feel like this is supposed to be entertainment, but it's like it's one little thing. I have a pile of books that I'm trying to get through. And I have 500 shows and movies that I'd like to watch. Even if I eliminate the ones where I'm like, I'm only watching this because other people say it's good, but do I really want to watch it? Even if I eliminate all those, I'm bogged down in that stuff. But it's a weird mentality to feel like you're bogged down in entertainment. It's like there needs to be an unplugging or like I go on, maybe I need to go to like some cabin for like 4 days with nothing but like a pen, paper, and like trail mix and like fucking pray in silence and walk and hear nature and just go, I don't care about anything else just for a few days. I'm just, maybe that's what I need to do, because it feels like once I hit a 3 day weekend, especially with the way comedy has been just like depressing me and the way work has been stressing me, it's almost like as soon as the 3 day weekend begins, there's like a clock or a stopwatch going, and I'm like, holy fuck, we're already 1 day down. What the fuck are we doing? And today, you know, I'm 11 hours from going to sleep. And when I wake up tomorrow, it's day job time. So it's not a healthy mindset I have. And of course I ended up ruining Christmas Eve for both my mother and the righteous girlfriend in separate incidences where I was like ranting at home to like, what's the point of going to the gym? What am I trying to do? Prolong a life that sucks? This is how I'm talking 3 days after thanking God that my mother is in good health and had a plus surgery, you know, according to the surgeon. So it's you know, it's not good. I'm acknowledging this is not a good, generous, or healthy mindset to have. But I'm literally just sitting there going, so I go to the gym. Why? And you know. The unspoken thing is when I was in my 20s, there was a lot more motivation to go to the gym for on many fronts. And now it's just like, oh, I'm going to the gym because I don't want to die. Just the same way I go to work because I don't want to get fired. It's like, that's bad. That's not good. Like you want to have some greater motivation to the things you do. Like I do comedy because if I quit comedy, I am a failure. If I continue doing comedy, I am only failing. I haven't finished the process of becoming a failure. So there's always that 1% chance of turning the ship around and finding success and even more elusive happiness. So it's a weird thing that the holidays do to me. I guess it does it to a lot of people, but I get very wrapped up in my own thoughts. So I then apologized to my mother. I didn't get her upset like I was mad at her, but she got upset knowing how unhappy I was. And I was like, what a selfish fucking dick I am to just not be able to control myself enough to just be like, yeah, just let your mom continue to be happy. This is already a stressful, sad enough time in many ways, but also a time where she's probably still emotionally recovering from what felt like could have been a death sentence. And I was just on the phone saying, you know, I'm watching my comedy career die while going to a job whose only motivation for me is not getting fired. And that's not something a mom wants to hear at the holidays. And then, you know, then you say to your girlfriend, hey, what the fuck am I doing with my life? Why is nothing working? Why is everything failing? What am I even prolonging this existence for? By the way, this is not like a suicidal thing. It's just sort of like, I said, what's the best case scenario? I have 40 more years of existence with nothing else. That's fuck the Grinch. Nobody can bring down Christmas like I can. But then I slept it off and, as is the usual thing, just bounced back and apologized and, said, don't worry, I'll bring down the dwindling righteous prick audience in a couple of days. So that's how my holidays went. Total lack of perspective, total selfishness, total misery until Christmas Day, and then I turned it around. I ate like a pig on Christmas, but that's okay because I'm back. I figured I was entitled to that. And then I started wondering, is eating shitty on Christmas? I ate poorly on Christmas Eve and Christmas. But I kept wondering, I was like, is this altering? Am I like, is the sugar like fucking with me? Am I like, is it fucking with my brain chemistry? Like I've been eating healthy and now it's like bringing me back to the misery. Like, you know, the way like a Pavlovian response, it's like, hey, when I was eating tons of cookies and sugar, I was depressed and miserable. Is it triggering those feelings before they actually happen? I'm like, uh-oh, I'm eating a bunch of cookies and candy. Does that mean I hate myself? So who knows if that's what was happening. But the point is, folks, 2022 is my year. Yeah, right. 2022 is the 14th straight year where I'm declaring it my year. One of these years I have to be correct, right? No, the answer is no. I could be incorrect. It's like betting red on a roulette table. Sure. It should come up sometimes, but you could also watch 25 black numbers come up and realize you're bankrupt and crying at a roulette table. So that is my Christmas. Great news about mom, not great news about me as a person, but we're bouncing back, folks. So I guess a couple of things. Oh, and today I went to Mass, had to bang out the back-to-back Masses this weekend. Ain't that a blip? Because you got Christmas Mass on Saturday morning, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, that doesn't count for Sunday. This is just another Sunday, the Holy Family, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, often used as a benign expletive, but also that's exactly what today was about. And one of my first bits on Racial Chameleon, my first album, is about Owen Wilson playing Joseph, just being flabbergasted that, you know, Mary used to be with God, and I'm supposed to compete with that. He's huge. That was the punchline before Owen Wilson became Mobius. And now in Loki, although there's a Jared Leto Marvel movie, because who isn't doing a Marvel movie? I'll tell you who. Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Cruise, and Daniel Day-Lewis. Okay? That's who's not fucking doing a Marvel movie. That's who's not selling out their artistry. But there's like a Jared Leto Marvel movie called Moribus or something, whatever the fuck it's called. And I was like, is this going to be my David Letterman Uma Oprah moment where I'm talking as Owen Wilson introducing Mobius to Moribus? Hey, I'm Mobius. I'm from Loki. You're a variant. What's your name? Oh, you're like a vampire named Moribus. Cool, man. Anyway, Went to Mass today, again, back-to-back days. Blessed art thou who dropped big checks Christmas weekend in the collection plate. But this woman and her, they just cut me on the line for communion, the Eucharist. They just cut me. Like, you go row by row, and I was walking out of my row, and then she just couldn't wait the extra 3 seconds as I shimmied through the pew. And just she cut me. And then I did the right thing, which is like, well, yeah, you know, your son and your husband, who's obviously a total cuck, you know, because we just, you know what the sermon, you know what one of the readings was today? Wives, obey your husbands. Husbands, do not nag your children and do not give your wives reason to be bitchy or whatever, you know, whatever the scripture says. That controversial, like, how can they say that? How can they say obey your... Well, you know, the priest obviously does some linguistical magic to make it sort of more applicable and palatable to today. But the point being, we just heard wives obey your husbands, and here is your husband trailing you, saying nothing as you cut another member of the parish in line for Eucharist. And I had about a 30-second walk until I was to receive the body of Christ. And I really had to tamper down the rage. I was like, this is not a mindset to receive the body of Christ. This is not to just have my, you know, fortunately I was wearing a mask to stay safe, but the jaw was clenched with rage under that mask. And I was just like, oh boy, this is not how I want to be at a place of peace. So I, in the course of that 30 seconds, just had to be like, turn the other cheek, JL, turn the other cheek. Just because this woman just couldn't obey protocols and just couldn't, you're hard to miss. You're clearly walking through the pew to go up there and get the Lord. But here she, you know, here she is just, no, me, I'm going. And I think in those 30 seconds, I was able to calm myself enough where I felt worthy. But, whew, I don't know what's going on here, folks. We are teetering on the edge of rage far too much, and it's really mostly self-directed. But, you know, just unpleasant. Just like. My version of Scrooge is less Bill Murray's Scrooged and more of a Daniel Plainview in There Will Be Blood. That's sort of my version of A Christmas Carol, just sitting at a desk grimacing, talking about how I hate most people, and, you know, at the end, beating a youth pastor to death. Anywho, I guess I only have a couple things to talk about review-wise and stuff, and then I'll let you get on with your week. But obviously, we have shows coming up, folks. We have, you know, I feel like I've written and put out amazing content. I hate the fucking... remind me never to say content in a genuine way. If I ever use the word content again, it must be ironic or with deep scorn. But I put out a mega Christmas video. I did a bunch of cameos this week, so it was a good week as always, Christmas week for the side hustles. So please go check out the mega YouTube video I put out. Those views pay. If you just click on the video tab of my J.O. Covan YouTube page, it should be the most recent video. It's like 10 minutes, but it's like Chappelle, Mitch McConnell, like all your favorites, giving like a 1 to 2 minute Christmas message. I think it's, you know, some of my best work, but whatever, just go enjoy that or don't. But show wise, I'm going to finally, as we kick into January, really start making some real direct contact with people, in sort of, publicity and just in those cities. But, Chicago, January 27th, Chicago Improv, February 2nd, San Jose Improv for you Northern California folk, February 6th, Flappers in Burbank, California, February 10th, Wise Guys in Jordan's Landing in Utah, which is like a 20-minute drive out of Salt Lake City. So, you know, looking forward to all those. And obviously, end of February, I'm on Billions. on Showtime. So, you know, that's where we're hitting our stride, I guess. Maybe, possibly. Wouldn't surprise me if COVID shut everything down. You know, you live by the COVID, you die by the COVID is my career's motto. Yeah, so hopefully, I mean, that's the other thing is I know a lot of people don't listen to this anymore, some people, but, oh, and I'm in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Sorry, I almost forgot that one because their fucking website still doesn't have, by the way, we are 12 days away from me appearing at the club. I've had the gig booked for, I think, almost 3 months. They finally put up one night, the Friday night ticket link, where my headshot is sideways. Which, you know, really not a very professional look to like look like, oh, you couldn't put your headshot correctly on the website. Wow. Can't wait to see this cognitively impaired moron perform at our club. And then the Saturday show, which people are asking about, ticket link still not up. 12 days. 12 days before the show, ticket link not up. So, you know, I'm going to take this money. I'm going to take their money and... just put it to good use, put it in my bank account and say never again, hashtag never forget, what a disgrace it was. But yeah, I guess I'll be, and I got a card from fans in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which was delightful. And I know they listened to the show. So thank you for that. Still trying to figure out how you got my address. But I know my address is available, but not my apartment. But since I know you list from the card, they included a Ron Reagan not afraid in the card, so I know they're righteous prick people. So I hope to see you at in Harrisburg as I trash not your city but your club. But yes, I will perform there. I will give it my all. I will deliver the goods that I've been delivering to various small but passionate crowds across this country. That started to sound like Mike Pence. I've been going around this country talking to great young Christian men about their pecs. Anyway, so Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, January 7th and 8th, assuming that the gigs remain on. I will be in an N95 mask the entire time except when speaking on stage because I don't trust the vast majority of central Pennsylvania. And I don't trust Omicron. It's a sneaky bitch. So that's that. And I guess that's that. Yeah, so then I have knee surgery in March. So I'm going to be not even requesting gigs until mid-April and beyond. So that's for whatever that's worth. I've said this enough. I've said this enough about billions and, you know, but I don't know. It'd be nice to have some representation. I don't know when the special's coming out. I know the special's great, but who gives a shit? I don't know. I almost forgot. See, I'm so miserable. I almost forgot I have like an A-plus special waiting to come out, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that will do. It probably won't do anything. Yeah, that's a lot on the horizon, but also, as you guys can probably tell, that's a lot to disappoint me. There's a lot of, you'd like to think there's opportunities for success, but it feels more like many opportunities for disappointment. But I'll tell you what doesn't disappoint me on fucking stage. So get your tickets, folks. You may think I'm maybe the reason I'm so miserable is because I really have to save up all my positive energy and skills for the stage, because that's the one place... sometimes you make your mom cry on Christmas Eve after she's recovered from her second bout of cancer. Sometimes you make your girlfriend cry 2 hours later because you see no hope or goodness in your life or the world. But you never, ever do that to your audiences. So, yeah. Get tickets to those shows if you're in those cities. And if you're not in those cities, don't tell me that you're not in those cities. I will assume it when you don't show up to the shows. You don't have to tell me the eve of a performance. Wanted to make it but can't, so hopefully the sending you this negative news 6 hours before you get on stage and you're nervous about how many ticket sales you have, hopefully that doesn't ruin your night and put you in a bad mood. So there you go, folks. A couple of reviews and then I'll get out of here. One thing. I discussed Spider-Man No Way Home last week. very controversial that I was stern with that 11-year-old who, you know, the fact is, when you cry midway through a Spider-Man film and you kick a stranger four times because you lack body control, there's obviously a lack of fatherly presence in the home. And if I have to be your surrogate father for 10 minutes during a Spider-Man film, then so be it. Okay? I'll have sex with your mom two seats over if that's what it takes to provide strong male role model leadership in your life. But no, as I said, I judged the child for crying, of course, because he was more like weeping. It wasn't even like a lump in my throat. It was like, you know, throw yourself on, spoiler, skip 10 seconds, spoiler, Spider-Man spoiler. Throw yourself on the casket of, spoiler, I'm going to say somebody who passed away, okay? So just skip 10 seconds. Throw yourself on the casket of Aunt May, okay? Like it's an emotional black funeral all you want, but not on my watch, okay? So moving on from that. I did also express remorse at how tough I had been, you know, that I couldn't, the kid seemed scared of me. Not because I said anything or did anything, but when I said excuse me, I was a giant man saying excuse me. And then I, as I expressed on the podcast, felt bad because I just one day would like somebody to, you know, the way a busty woman will say my eyes are up here and then, you know, you respond, yeah, I don't give a shit though. I'm looking at your tits. I want to say to people, no, please don't judge me by my imposing size and my angry eyebrows. I'm just simply asking for manners. Like, hey, imagine I was a 4'11" homely but kind woman also wanting manners. You wouldn't be intimidated then, so don't be intimidated now. Just say excuse me or sorry if you kick a stranger in the leg. Don't wait until the third time when he goes, excuse me. But anyway, that kid is my new stepson. That's what I wanted to reveal on this episode. I did, in fact, ask his mom out after the movie, and we got it on, and now I'm going to be that kid's stepfather. So there is a happy... No, I'm just kidding, guys. And then I made her cry on Christmas Eve, and it's all over. Anyway, they're talking about Spider-Man No Way Home. They're pitching. They're doing an Oscar campaign. They're going to try and get it a Best Picture nomination. And here's the thing. And I'm talking to Rod of the Black Guy Who Tips specifically here, because I think this is a great opportunity for a Kyrie Irving, Ted Cruz sort of coalition, an unlikely coalition. I, of course, stan The Dark Knight. I think it's one of the greatest movies of the last 25 years, and I think it is the unquestionable champion of the comic book universe. And it laid the groundwork for comic book movies to be considered greater than just mass entertainment. In fact, like Wilt Chamberlain, who got the rules changed for him because he was so great and dominant, it was The Dark Knight's snub at the 2008-09 Oscars that got the Best Picture category expanded beyond five nominees. So I think the legacy of The Dark Knight should be secure in everyone's mind, but there are some people who think that Black Panther could and should be considered the GOAT among comic book films. I call these people lunatics, but it's a free country. But what I see here is a chance for an unlikely coalition. A Chuck Schumer and a Liz Cheney sex tape, if you will, where the Black Panther coalition joins forces with the Dark Knight coalition to condemn the absurdity, the lunacy of a Spider-Man No Way Home Best Picture campaign. Because once that happens, once that atrocity occurs, which, by the way, as I said on Twitter and Facebook, say what you will about Harvey Weinstein, but under his strong leadership in Hollywood, you would not be witnessing a Spider-Man No Way Home Best Picture nomination. he would have done whatever it takes, and I think you know what I mean. He would have done whatever it takes to get four other indie films nominated before Spider-Man No Way Home got nominated. He would have resurrected Aunt May, sexually assaulted her, then re-murdered her just to make sure that that movie doesn't get nominated. Spoiler again. I forgot to say that. Spoiler again. Damn it. I apologize, but you know what? If you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, it's probably not as important to you as the people who saw it the night of. And it's been out for a little while, so I apologize if I ruined that. I did not want to do that, but you know what? It was worth it for the joke, wasn't it? Yes, I think it was. So, I seek biracial, bi-movie, bipartisanship to stop this absurdity known as the Spider-Man No Way Home Best Picture campaign. I think if Avengers Endgame, which was a great movie, didn't get the nomination, and if the first Spider-Man with Tom Holland, I actually think was great, as I've said before, I don't think that I'm not an anti-comic book person. Am I exhausted with them now? Kind of. But no, Spider-Man No Way Home. No. It's a nicely done nostalgia fest for comic book people. If it gets nominated for Best Picture, we will have entered a point of no return in our art and culture. Like I thought of a joke where I said, oh, if Spider-Man No Way Home gets nominated for Best Picture, does that mean we're in the timeline where everybody's a fucking idiot? Is there a different timeline in the metaverse where people still can distinguish, I think this was fun from I think this is great? And speaking of which, I watched season 2 of Ted Lasso, folks. Can we stop now? Can we stop? The Ted Lasso is amazing. It's fine. Jason Sudeikis, I think, is a talented guy. I'm exhausted. Exhausted with Ted Lasso, the character. Exhausted. It combines two of my least favorite things in the world at this point. Midwestern folksiness and alt-comic nonstop reference making. It's a fine show. My favorite by far in season 2 was the 2-episode arc of the guy, the chubby comedic black actor who was in Detroiters, which I didn't really care for, but Veep. He was Richard in Veep, a phenomenal character, which I think like kind of launched his career, or at least gave it a monstrous boost because he was so damn funny on Veep. He played like a Ghanaian billionaire who was trying to get one of the players to join an African league. And I thought his two episodes, maybe three, but arc was just so good because it was like a non-humorous role, not a dramatic role, but it was just a moving the plot along. And then he has just a hilarious scene in the second to last episode or the last episode, but just tremendous. It's a nice show. If you like it, great. I think it's okay. I think it's nice. I think it's a nice show. I think it's pretty well made. I'm a little annoyed with the character Ted Lasso, who's obviously the centerpiece. They gave an entire episode to maybe my least favorite character on the show, Beard, who seems like he was written in there specifically by an alt comic who perceives himself as the real hero of comedy and then wanted a sort of avatar in the Ted Lasso world. I don't know. I kind of like plot-wise, I liked where it ended, but I don't know if I'm really going to get into a season 3 with everything that's out. I just feel like I'm like, I gave it 2 seasons. It's fine. But this whole smile fest, feel good fuckery that has invaded comedy awards with, first it was Schitt's Creek. Obviously, I've been very vocal about that being a nice show that it wasn't that funny. And Ted Lasso is sort of the same thing. And I don't understand Maybe I'm just out of step. I know that people laugh their asses off when they see me perform and they like my videos, but at the same time, I feel like, am I just out of step with what, where the world is going in terms of comedy, in terms of, should I just be an algorithm chasing piece of shit and just like try to cash in instead of making things that I perceive are good? 'Cause for me right now, my two favorite comedies, I am going to start watching Southside, and I joked with Rod and Chris on Facebook, Chris Lamberth, Rod of the Black Eye Tips, that after reading an article in The New Yorker about Southside, I was like, oh, maybe I'll try it again. Maybe I'll try it. I didn't try it. I just sort of ignored it. But there seems to be this thing where Comedy Central keeps making like one season of shows that people really like, and then they just don't make another season. And HBO Max took the other two and Southside. Now, the other two, I'm going to say right now, without having watched Southside, when the Emmys for Best Comedy are announced next year, there's two shows that I want to see nominated, and I want to see one of them win. One of them is Curb Your Enthusiasm, which in its, whatever it is, 11th season, I think may be its best season yet. That show's been nominated a bunch, but it's that nominee that everybody seems to take for granted. Like, oh yeah, Larry David, comedic genius, made Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm, love it, never going to win. The idea that Curb Your Enthusiasm has zero wins, and don't get me wrong, in other years it was competing against very strong comedies, you know, like The Office and Parks and Recreations, Modern Family, maybe even Arrested Development. I don't know if they ever overlapped, to be honest. But in other words, all-time comedies, strong comedies, comedies that actually showed that you could feel good and make people laugh hysterically and not just have to choose one or the other. And then, of course, Transparent won one year, and SNL, in the best episode of SNL of the last 20 years, maybe the Tom Hanks episode. Black Jeopardy, Sully, what was his name? Pumpkins, David S. Pumpkins, not mentioned often enough sketch in that one was the parody of Transparent, where it was like this really depressing drama, but one of the quotes from the critics was like, "It's a half hour, so it's a comedy," and then it's just like people going, "Ah, yeah," like it was a hilarious send up of Transparent and the idea that that show was a comedy. Well, we've only tripled down on this idea of comedy now being about, in show form, feel good, and in stand up form, serious exploration of issues. So you go from Transparent to Hannah Gadsby, to Schitt's Creek, to Dave Chappelle, to Ted Lasso, where the laughs aren't coming very strong, but the powerful feelings or the feel-good smileness is coming through very strongly. Well, Curb Your Enthusiasm has zero Emmy wins for comedy. Schitt's Creek has one. Ted Lasso has one. Anybody out there want to tell me that Schitt's Creek or Ted Lasso is a better comedy than Curb Your Enthusiasm? I don't think so. I don't know that argument can't be made seriously. And then we get to my show, The Other Two, which had a great first season on Comedy Central and then just disappeared. And like it disappeared close enough to the pandemic that you're like, was it the pandemic? Maybe. But then it seemed like Comedy Central just abandoned it and HBO Max dropped season two. And my goodness, it went from an excellent comedy to a god level comedy. I mean, episode 5 of season 2 of The Other Two, Chase Gets Baptized, I believe is the title of it. It is a send up of like a Hillsong church. It's called Christ Song in the episode. This is, I think, my favorite. It might be my favorite episode of television of 2021. But the whole season was really just masterful. And I mean really laughing out loud funny. And I don't know when that became like not the most important criteria of comedy. And The Other Two is inclusive. You know, it's half the plot is centered around a gay sibling who's, you know, exploring both his career and his sexuality in a humorous way. So it is touching on obviously underrepresented communities, but in a way that is just so damn good and so funny. And the lead actress in the show who play, you know, she's just phenomenal. Like, she should be nominated for get out of here. I call her the funnier but less intimidating Kaylee Cuoco, or however you pronounce her name. You know, the flight attendant lady and the Big Bang woman. But yeah, that's, I just, you know, give me some hope, comedy gods. Just even if it's not me, even if I just have to be the Moses or the John the Baptist of saving comedy for the world, even if I'm just ushering in the savior, let there be signs like, hey, you know what won Curb Your Enthusiasm, won Best Comedy, or the other two won Best Writing for a sitcom. Don't do this to me. Don't give me another Ted Lasso sweep. Although, got to give a compliment to the Ted Lasso people before you completely bail on this episode. The guy who plays Roy Kent, I think he has gotten more miserable and more one note this season, but it works as comedic choice. His performance was the other than the guest appearance by the guy playing the Ghanaian billionaire. Wouldn't it be funny if you were from Ghana, you were called a Ghanarian? Anyway, but the point being, Roy Kent, I think that's Brett Goldstein, if I'm not mistaken. Please feel free to correct me in the Podomatic comments page. But I'm pretty sure that's him, and he has made me laugh legitimately this season. I've enjoyed his performance, and it's more like he's shown a little bit of, you know, emotional range, but mostly just, you know, frowning misery, which, as you can probably tell, I appreciate greatly. So yeah, if you like Ted Lasso, great. There's not much to dislike, but somebody's got to save comedy. If that be my mission, if King Herod of comedy will one day behead me, but I have said one day a comedian whose mic cord I am not fit to adjust emerges, then so be it. I'm sorry that I'm getting into my John the Baptist quotes, but we just got out of Advent and Christmas season, so come on, get on board. Listen to the good news, folks. And as far as books go, I made it 200 pages through Gomorrah, which is a 300-page book. It reads too much. To be honest, after the 9,000th Italian name, I was just like, I'm lost. I'm just going to watch the show. I think I've done 200 out of 300 pages is good enough for this sort of book that, though the author definitely tries to personalize it with a lot of rhetorical and metaphorical flourishes, which I appreciate, it really just reads like a 300-page report on the Naples Mafia or the Naples Criminal Syndicate. And so I just quit after 200 pages. I'm just going to start the show soon. So my next book is, what's it called? Let me put on my glasses like an old fucking man because the book is across the room. The Dead Are Arising. It won the Pulitzer Prize, I believe, last year for biography. It's about Malcolm X. It'll be another biography of Malcolm X, but this one is being dubbed the definitive biography of Malcolm X. So I'm going to read that. And also, the last one was by Manning Marable, and I'm forgetting the title of that, but I read that, and that was like a New York Times top 10, and it might have also won the Pulitzer. So basically, folks, if you want to, but both authors died like either immediately preceding publication or immediately after of, like, you know, terminal illness, and basically, I think I'd take that trade off. It's like, hey, if you want a Pulitzer, and you're willing to just die for it, write a comprehensive biography on Malcolm X. The first one was like 2010 and then 2021. And boom, you know, it's a tough trade-off, I'll admit. But yeah, go for it. Anyway, that's the next book up, The Dead Are Arising. So I'll let you know how that is. Hopefully I'll be done with that in a couple of weeks, especially with a trip to Harrisburg. Extra reading time then. But yeah, I think maybe that'll be my next album title. Are Ghanareans from Ghana? If you're from Ghana, are you a Ghanarean? So yeah, that's, you know, this was a good episode, folks, I think. You know, I gave you a couple of laughs after revealing just just how deeply, if you think my podcast can ruin a morning, just imagine having to spend Christmas Eve with me. Huh? Now you're like, eh, podcast is a safe distance. I can appreciate his artistic misery without actually having to be immersed in it, like the poor unfortunate women who are close to him. So thank you for listening, everybody. This is the last episode of 2021, a year that I have dubbed 2020, but with the worst PR agent. So I hope you are all safe. Get boosted if you haven't. It's the right thing to do for you, for your family, and your community. And if you don't, you know, so be it. We're all fucked. But thank you for everyone who has listened either sporadically or consistently this year. Thank you if you've ordered a cameo, if you've watched my videos on YouTube, if you've come to a show, if you're coming to a show, if you've bought tickets to a future show. I do appreciate all of you. This is the one area where, like, I think my personal and my comedy bleed together, which can sometimes be good and sometimes be miserable. But if you're ever on the fence about coming to a show, know that my shows, this is where I get to purge some of my darker thoughts about comedy, so that when I see and meet paying customers at live shows, I deliver the goods. So don't let that be a reason not to come to a live show. So I hope to see many of you, some of you, all of you at live shows in 2022 and beyond. But thank you for the support. Thank you for putting up with me sometimes. And also, you're welcome for some of the episodes that were really good. So if you haven't already, please check out Making Podcasts Great Again. We're posting our awards episode in addition to a regular episode this week. It was a tour de force by me, I'm not going to lie. It was you know, GOAT level voiceover work on this week's episode, where I was playing probably like six different of my impressions. But I hope you were all safe. I hope you all had Merry Christmases. I hope you all made it through. I hope you and your families made it through 2021 all right. And I hope 2022 is better for all of us. So thank you. You're going to listen to this Monday. But for 2022, I will see you next Tuesday.